Hi there, I'm Jimmy. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you like what you're about to hear, you can get the full experience and see the video on YouTube in the description with this episode. And you can always find more episodes and activities waiting for you at dwaba.org.
Since the dawn of paleontology, scientists have sought new and exciting ways to make the past come alive. Statues, paintings, animations, and even robots are developed every few years to show us what these Mesozoic marvels may have looked like in the flesh. They're often assembled by teams of scientists and artists working together. But occasionally, someone comes along with the scientific aspirations and the creative ingenuity to undertake this task alone. Who in their right mind would even attempt a feat of this magnitude?
Somebody who believes that dinosaurs will always be awesome. That's the time.
Today, I'm going to build a dinosaur of my very own. It's not a feat for the faint of heart, but I'm doing it because my public demands it. And honestly, it'll be really awesome when it's done. I've decided I'm going to build a life-size tyrannosaur. Now, even though my favorite is T-Rex, which is something a lot of you have told me that we have in common. Fact of the matter is, I simply don't have enough room in the studio here to make that a reality. So, I'm gonna go a little older, and a little smaller, and a little further east. With a few simple materials, a little trial and error, and a whole lot of editing, we can make something really incredible together. This is D-Long Paradoxus. The Emperor Dragon. Originally found in Liaoning, China, it has a distinct reputation of being the oldest of the tyrannosauroids, about 156 million years old from the early Cretaceous period. In the last 15 years since its discovery, scientists have gone back and forth over the true ancestry of D-Long. Was it really a great-great-grand Rexy, or was it something else entirely? Thankfully, paleontology is very much a living science, and the current classification will be right until it's wrong. This terrific type specimen was nearly complete. Skull, vertebrae, limb bones, and a tail, which was covered in simple downy feathers. Skin impressions show us that young D-Long may have had selective areas of feathers to help it stay warm, and as they grew up, adapted the more scaly, pebbly skin coverings like their Descendosaurus rexes. Now, I'm starting with a piece of paleo art from my friend and colleague Scott Hartman, whose skeletal drawings are meticulously drawn for research, analysis, and museum studies. Paleo art is the blending of science and creativity to make the past come alive. Contemporary artists like Scott Hartman, Michael Skrepnik, Mark Witten, and Nobuichi Tamura use exasperating details of the fossil record to produce visually stunning life restorations. The newest innovation in paleo art is the creation of life-size interactives that can meet a crowd of families and scientists and let you believe you're looking at a living, breathing dinosaur, even for a moment. And one Arizona artist has found an incredible way to do just that.
Very excited for today. We have a wonderful guest with us. We have from TRX Dinosaurs. You can find him on Instagram and across social media. We're very excited to have with us Keegan. Keegan, how you doing, sir?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much for being here. So, without giving away too much, can you kind of tell us a little bit about what it is that you do? You have some amazing talents and some really crazy creations behind you. Can you tell us a little what you make?
Yeah, so TRX Dinosaurs is a paleontology company that promotes innovations in paleo art. So, doing puppets, animatronics, and exhibits, trying to branch the connection between education and entertainment in a little bit more of an innovative way than we've seen traditionally.
That's fantastic. I see a lot of really different kinds of animals behind you. Is there a particular type that you really enjoy making more than the rest?
We get commissioned a lot to do theropods, and I like theropods. I mean, the raptors are awesome. You know, Deinonychus and Utah raptor and Dakota raptor are some of my favorite species. Absolutely. So I like doing those. But really, I love all types of dinosaurs. The hadrosaurs are also one of my favorites.
You like to do hadrosaurs?
Yeah, I haven't gotten commissioned yet to do a hadrosaur. I'm waiting for a client to come along who says they want a big Parasaurolophus.
I noticed your shirt. That's one of my favorite dinosaurs. That's absolutely one of the coolest ones.
That's it.
Now, if you find yourself making a Parasaurolophus, will you include some sounds and things? Will you make it? That's one of the ones we have an idea of what they sounded like when they bellowed. Would you incorporate that?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to. It really kind of comes down to what the client wants. Everything that we're doing so far is commission. So if a client was interested in doing a sound box, that would be awesome. And I think sound, you know, would be something that bridges that gap into, you know, the imagination into reality. And so I would love to see more museums using sound in their animatronics.
What kind of museums have already utilized some of your work? Where can we see some of your dinosaurs in the wild?
Yeah, so the Alf Museum in Southern California has one of our Allosaurus puppets, and they use that for outreach and education. They are our only museum at this point. Well, mostly our clients have been amusement parks and private collectors, and a few museums have reached out, but it's all about budget. And so that's part of what we're doing too, is paleo art tends to be very expensive. It's labor intensive, it's time intensive. And so what we're trying to do is as affordably as possible. So that's the choice of materials is part of that.
Keegan has refined his process and often shares the construction of his dinosaurs on his Instagram stories. He estimates that from concept to carnivore, the process can take up to 60 hours of carving. First, an up-to-date skeletal model is used to create a sense of scale. The rough body form is carved out of the foam, then shaped into a more specific pose. Scales, skin folds, and other details are carved in using a hot knife and then sealed with a special blend of lightweight, non-allergenic sealants. Animatronic eyes are built into a special glove that the operator will use with the dinosaur. These blinking, adorable baby blues give the dinosaur an extra level of realism. Then, it's off to the painting studio, where the final application of paint, clear coats, and feathers are added to bring the new baby dinosaur to life.
Yeah, so most of our pieces are made out of upholstery foam, essentially. It's a polyurethane foam. It's easy to sculpt. It's ultra lightweight. It's durable. It's a great material to use for, again, outreach, because you're not dealing with pieces that are necessarily fragile. They can be handled by kids. They can take the abuse of going out of the museum or out of an exhibit.
You don't have to worry about like latex allergies or anything at that point either, right? Because if it's all polyurethane, that's a non-allergenic material.
Exactly. And then we seal the puppets or the sculptures usually with silicone, which is a non-allergenic substance as well. So, and it's medical grade silicone most of the time.
Great.
And so, yeah, it makes it, again, easier and more accessible.
So the number one question that I have to come back around to is, how does somebody get into doing something like this?
Yeah, it's somebody who believes that dinosaurs will always be awesome. That's how. you know, like I'm sure all of your guests, I'm a dinosaur fan since I was a kid. It was a passion, but you know, we all tend to try and grow up. But the reality is that if that little kid still lives in a lot of us, and then it's just letting that out. And so I started sculpting again. I sculpted as a teenager, but I started sculpting again about 5 years ago, and that quickly went from doing small scale miniatures to doing full scale pieces. And I travel a lot for my other job, and anytime I have free time, I go to the museums because I want to see what are the local natural history museums doing. And I found I was really disappointed with a lot of what was available. There was either outdated information or extremely dated mounts or just exhibits that just really weren't that engaging. And I saw that there was this missed opportunity for a lot of kids who could have this excitement around dinosaurs not being really fulfilled or nurtured. And we know that when kids are excited about dinosaurs, that branches so easily into all other aspects of science. It's this perfect gateway to look at our relationship with the natural world. So it's this really, I think, a really important thing for encouraging youth and all people really to be excited about paleontology, because again, it's this gateway into other aspects of science. And so seeing that and being an artist myself, I thought, you know, if I could provide museums another option to have more engaging, more innovative exhibits or attractions to bring more people in to learn more, that would be a great thing. So that's really the impetus behind T-Rex Dinosaurs.
Keegan and T-Rex Dinosaurs recently launched a Kickstarter campaign in January, and within a few days exceeded their goal to make the process much more efficient and bring baby dinosaurs to museums and personal collectors all around the world.
That's a fantastic mission. That's an amazing reason to get up and do something that has a phenomenally positive impact on the world around you. What was the first dinosaur that you sculpted, either personally or professionally? You said you started when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was sculpting, you know, obviously most dinosaur fans of our generation are Jurassic Park fans, so I did a lot of Jurassic Park inspired, you know, raptors and T-Rex. But the first big piece that I did, the first full-scale piece I did was a Deinonychus, a fully feathered Deinonychus that was about, gosh, almost 9 feet long. Yeah, and you can see pictures of that on our Instagram and on our website, trxdinosaurs.com. And I had so much fun doing that, and to have, you know, this 9 foot long dinosaur in my living room was also great. You know, who wouldn't want a 9 foot long dinosaur in their living room? So that really got me thinking, okay, I could actually do this and provide this to, as a service to museums and to educators around the world, because the materials are so affordable. They're so lightweight, so they're easy to ship, and they allow for innovation. So our pieces are all posable. So they have a wire armature inside that allows you to pose a piece so you could change your exhibit at any point.
So even if I'm not engaging with the public, using it as a puppet or making it move, I can still have it out on display, and it's a great piece to just showcase what the animal looked like as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Brilliant. I love that. So can we have a little tour? Can we see some of the things that you're working on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see behind without having to move the camera. There's an unfinished baby T-Rex, the little white one, which will have a down on it eventually, but we're going to do two versions of it. So it'll have a scaled version and then also the feathered down.
Okay.
But unfinished, I actually don't have a lot of finished pieces right now. There's a Dimetrodon, not a dinosaur.
Right.
I know this is a dinosaur podcast. But Dimetrodon, that's a posable sculpture, not a puppet. There's a Protoceratops with no legs, still a work in progress, but you can see the rough form. So we start with big blocks and then just start to carve from there.
Now that Protoceratops is roughly life size, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And so that's for a client called Permia. They're actually the ones who made this T-shirt. They're a paleontology art clothing company. And so they commissioned, that's their logo. So that's the color scheme, again, came from their input.
That's very cool.
But to show you it maybe a little bit more close up, this is how I start with a piece. This is an Allosaurus commission. Again, you start with really rough upholstery foam, you know, disc blocks, sculpt out what you want, and then from there start to cut away. So this will be an arm puppet.
That's going to be amazing. That looks so great already.
Thanks, man.
How has your development process been? Because since you started making the first ones, you know, every time you make a new one, I'm sure there's something like, oh, I could do this a little bit differently, or maybe I'll try this time. What are some of the things that you've had to innovate for yourself on the fly?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. A big part is durability. You know, my first puppets were not durable because it was just about the look. And then so trying to produce something that was much easier to either clean or maintain. And so there's been a bunch of innovations with that. There's always innovations when it comes to how fast I can do something. So that white baby infant T-Rex or hatchling T-Rex will be cast because I want them to be able to mass produce them, get the cost down to make them more affordable for more people to have. And then there's always the 1,000 ideas of what I'd like to do and the hope that a museum would be interested or an amusement park that has a budget would be interested in doing. Last year at SVP, the Society for Vertebrate Paleontology meeting in Calgary, I unveiled a very rough but working prototype for a walking dinosaur exhibit. They have a very broken version of one of the early prototypes. But what it is that, and the skin's removed so you can see a little bit of the inner workings. It's a piece that will actually walk on its own. It's suspended from the ceiling. But the idea would be so that you go to a museum, and instead of just stationary pieces or you have an animatronic that is locked off and just moves its head, this would be a piece that could walk around. And so it could either walk around a room or it could walk around a centerpiece. Again, to try and make it more engaging, get people to realize too that these aren't like these mythical dragons, or I think people have a hard time sometimes visualizing that these were real animals. And so showing that motion, showing that movement gets people to realize like, oh, these are real animals, just like the animals that are alive today.
you can really illustrate that agility and show that these animals are not just slow, sluggish swamp dwellers, that goes so far beyond just what they see with the dusty bones. That's been fantastic, and I love that. Did you do a lot of anatomical study of other animals, trying to get the structures down?
Yeah, definitely. It's that and looking at skeletal reconstructions. Mm-hmm. So looking, Scott Hartman, I think, is one of the best paleo artists out there who does skeletal reconstruction drawings.
Scott is one of the best paleo artists of all time, definitely. I had a chance to work with him a few years back at the Wyoming Dinosaur Center, because every episode I do of this circles back there at some point, places to hub. But speaking of, who are some of your other paleo artist influences? I know a lot of times when we think of paleo artists, one of the first names that always comes out is Charles Knight, because of all the paintings that he did for a Museum of Natural History and Smithsonian. But even though those things are classic and timeless, they still, at this point now, they kind of reinforce a lot of outdated things. But so when you look for a paleo artist today, like, who are some of your influences?
Scott Hartman, for sure. Yeah. James Gurney, I think, is a really phenomenal paleo artist who I don't think gets enough credit, because, you know, he branches into the realm of fantasy. James Gurney did the Dinotopia series. Mm-hmm. Gary Staub, I think that's how you say his name. Yeah, I mean, that guy. I mean, and his whole team, his whole studio is just—they're the best in my.
One last question, most important question I ask of every single person, and I cannot let this interview end without getting the answer from Keegan. What's your favorite dinosaur?
You know, my favorite dinosaur is probably Deinonychus. It was one of my favorite as a kid. You know, loving the Jurassic Park movies and loving the raptors in the Jurassic Park movies, and, you know, knowing enough about dinosaurs to say, hey, those aren't really what velociraptors look like. And the closest thing that I was aware of was Deinonychus, or Deinonychus is what I called it growing up. Still don't know if it's Deinonychus or Deinonychus.
You know what? When you talk about Deinonychus, I know you must have at some point seen the same special that I saw back in the 80s when Christopher Reeve did the special from the Museum of Natural History, and they had all the stop motion. I think they just called it Dinosaur with exclamation point.
Yeah.
And they had that intense sequence where a pack of Deinonychus take down a Struthiomimus, and it's just so vivid and agile the way they made these things look. And when you said that, man, I love Deinonychus, like, he must have seen that crazy stop motion thing.
Yeah, man.
I just had a good time with it.
That's it. I mean, they're just such cool animals. And again, like, you know, everybody likes the big dinosaurs, and I really like the smaller dinosaurs because it brings them down to that more human size.
Right.
And so that's, I think, is cool. And it's just another thing to engage with.
Well, hey, I appreciate you so much for spending the time with us here. Congratulations on all your success, and I can't wait to see more of your dinosaurs stomping around. And I really want to see more progress made on that particularly purple Permian predator you got going on right there, because that Dimetrodon is fantastic.
Thanks, man.
Keegan, thank you so much. TRX dinosaurs, and you know that they're always going to be awesome. Thank you guys so much. I've spoken to paleontologists from the UK and Mexico and people from Portugal and locals here in America, and it's all like, yeah, I was really into dinosaurs as a kid, and then when other people changed their mind, I just kind of didn't. And so it's just amazing that, like, we in this beautiful, crazy world of terrible lizards just kind of keep the dream alive.
That's it, man. That's it.
Thank you for doing what you do, man. Those are really special things.
Thanks, man.
I really think they're amazing.
Well, thanks for doing what you're doing.